from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Hey, good morning, G and Ursula Show listeners, and we are grateful that you listen to the show. Coming up in 25 minutes, Stacy Joe, our Seahawks insider, will join us to talk about last night's amazing win against the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football. But right now, if you do have questions for our next guest, send those COVID-related questions in. 98973 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, we have a guest.
We sure do. We've been waiting a week with our COVID questions. It's time to bring in Dr. Angela Rasmussen.
I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business.
Good morning, doctor. Thank you so much
Good
for
morning.
Joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, so...
Great to be here.
Okay, we're having a bit of a problem with your phone. So hopefully we can get that straightened out. But I'm going to jump right into our first question because this is happening today. Centers for Disease Control Advisors are going to be voting today on their recommendations about who should get the first coronavirus vaccines. And they are right now, as far as we know it, healthcare workers and people in long-term care would get first priority. So much is being talked about in terms of getting schools reopened. Should teachers be among those first in line?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question, and I'm going to be very interested to see what the panel votes on, because I would consider teachers to be in the same category as essential workers who are not in healthcare, and they have certainly been proposed as one group that would be potentially prioritized. That's going to be, however, competing with other groups that also have a claim to prioritization, such as people who have known comorbidities that would predispose them to more severe COVID outcomes. So it really is going to be very interesting to see what the panel decides.
And Dr. Rasmussen, the other thing regarding schools is that it seems like each week there's kind of a change in the recommendations. And now Dr. Anthony Fauci is among those who are saying that the virus isn't spreading as much through schools, and that maybe the emphasis should be don't reopen the bars, but reopen the schools first. What is your opinion on that?
So I agree with the part about, keeping the bars closed so that we can open the schools. And other countries have really done that pretty successfully. In Germany, for example, where they just had a sort of modified stay-home order, that was the entire purpose of that stay-home order. It was to reduce community transmission to the point that you could allow schools to remain open while closing other businesses such as indoor dining, restaurants, and bars, as well as gyms. Where I don't necessarily agree with Dr. Fauci, as much as I hate to disagree with him, I don't think that we actually have good enough data still at this point to make a conclusive statement that coronavirus isn't spreading in schools. Right now, transmission is out of control across the country, and we can't really determine that by standard contact tracing because there are just too many cases to contact trace. And there's been a real problem with actually getting unbiased data from school systems. Largely, the data from schools is self-reported by those schools, and that can be heavily biased in terms of which schools decide to report, which schools have access to testing and things like that. So I think that we're still not there with the data, but I do think it is a good idea to close bars and restaurants and gyms and businesses like that for the sake of keeping schools open.
Doctor, this is from Lisa. She asked, can you please walk through the timeline of what it will look like once the vaccination comes out? Because, they're basically saying that first responders and vulnerable people will probably be first in line, which is awesome. But can you give us a timeline of like how it will go for the regular Joe to get one, how long it will take and all that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. One that my short answer is going to be, I don't know, but I can make some educated guesses. So right now, Pfizer and Moderna, assuming that both of them are issued an emergency use authorization within the next week or two, both of those vaccines have about 20 million doses that are available for the United States market. Those are both two-dose vaccine regimens. So that means that effectively 20 million doses of each means that they can each vaccinate 10 million people. That's barely enough to vaccinate all frontline healthcare workers. I think there are about 15 million of those in the U.S. So there's a little bit left over for people in long-term care facilities, things like that. But there's still probably going to be more vaccine that's going to need to be manufactured for the highest priority groups, which puts us back a few months into 2021 at the earliest that it will be available for the general public. I mean, my personal opinion is that I think it would be wonderful if we could walk into a Safeway pharmacy as we did for our flu shot in October and get a COVID vaccine sometime early next summer.
425 wants to know, how long until we know if any of the coronavirus vaccines are able to block transmission?
Now, that is an excellent question and one that I would very much like the answer to. So the phase three clinical trials that were conducted, as far as I know, have not been measuring the viral loads in the so-called events. Those are cases of COVID within the vaccine trial participants that were detected. And these trials are reading out with a primary endpoint of protecting against symptomatic COVID-19. So they're not really looking at viral load at all in these clinical trials. And that's a really important question because the vaccine is certainly still going to be incredibly helpful if it protects against severe disease, but maybe a little bit less helpful in terms of us being able to return to our normal lives if people who are vaccinated can transmit the virus, especially if they are capable of transmitting it to a large number of people who are not yet vaccinated. So that's something that I think they're going to have to look at very, very closely in the so-called phase four period of vaccine testing, which is really the post-market testing. Once the vaccine is actually out and available, they will continue to test people who have been vaccinated. I think they absolutely have to look at that because obviously transmission is a huge thing, and we really need to reduce that in addition to protecting people from severe COVID-19.
So earlier this morning, I read a report, and somehow I missed it. So maybe it was because of the Thanksgiving holiday, but that Seattle King County Health had released this report that shows 15% of the people who tested positive for COVID over the past 2 months had gotten sick after going to a restaurant or food establishment. So that report also said that restaurants have accounted for the second highest number of outbreaks in King County outside of healthcare facilities, including 40 in the past 60 days. So as you have heard, because you live in Washington, you know that there is quite the uproar about restaurants having to close, restaurants and gyms, but in particular if we talk about restaurants, because over and over we hear that there is no data, there's no information. So this was the first time I'd heard anything attributed to restaurants locally. But just given this limited amount of information, I know for a fact that when I went to restaurants, I didn't give any contact information. I wasn't asked and I didn't offer it. So we really don't know, do we?
Well, so that's the tricky part of epidemiology. A lot of contact tracing is really sort of scientific detective work. And it's talking to people about where they've been, what they've been doing. You probably wouldn't have been asked where you've been if you went into a restaurant and you didn't test positive for COVID. So I'm assuming that they're basing this information on contact tracing, which is people who have been either infected or a primary exposure to somebody who has been a confirmed positive case. So if those people are saying, you know, well, I haven't done anything except I went to a restaurant with this person, then, you know, maybe that's pretty straightforward that that's how you got exposed. But if somebody say, well, I went to a restaurant one day and then I went to a restaurant another day and then I went to the gym and then I got my nails done, that makes it a lot harder to contact trace. And so a lot of this epidemiology work is very intuitive. And I think that people would be surprised at how unscientific it might actually seem, because really it's just talking to people and trying to retrace who they've been talking to and where they've gone. And people often are not the best the most reliable narrators of their own lives. And this applies to myself, too. I know I went to the grocery store last week. Do I remember exactly what day or time I went there? Not necessarily. So a lot of that work is really dependent on people's own recollections of their activities, as well as, their contact recollection of those activities, and the skill of the contact tracer, and of course, the willingness to participate in contact tracing overall. So it's really difficult to get that data, but hearing that data does not surprise me in the least. I mean, restaurants, indoor restaurants, have multiple risk factors for transmission, so it does make sense to me from a virology perspective why those would be hotbeds for COVID transmission.
Okay, so what do you think about the CDC now? This is another thing in the headlines this week. The CDC possibly shortening the quarantine time to 7 to 10 days.
So that was based on a couple studies that have showed that you might not need to quarantine for a full 14 days because of a couple different things. One, we know that people can test positive for a long time, sometimes weeks after they've recovered from COVID, but none of those people are associated with new infections or new cases. So they're shedding virus RNA, which is detected by the test, but they're not actually shedding infectious virus. We think that based on a number of different clinical studies that have been done, that most of the virus shedding occurs in the pre-symptomatic period and right after a person has the onset of symptoms. So people, if they're going to get sick within that period of time, are most likely to be contagious within that 7 to 10 day window. And another study has come out that showed that basically, and it was validated in a group of, I think, oil rig workers, that if you quarantine for 10 days and then you get a test on the last day and that test is negative, you're good to go. So I think that some of the recommendations for shortening it are also practical. It's based on these data, but it also makes it a lot easier for people to comply with quarantine guidelines if they're not having to isolate themselves for an entire 2 weeks.
253 wants to know, has there been any discussion on whether or not this vaccine will need to be administered every 6 months, annually, once? Which one?
So we don't know that either. But right now, we are, getting on our 12 months of this pandemic, and there is no indication that any of the variants of this virus that are circulating are going to be less actively neutralized by the vaccine. So right now, there's no evidence that the virus has mutated in a way that would make it immune or able to evade protection provided by the vaccine. Oh. So that would be the only reason you would need to get it more frequently than 6 months, because based on data from the phase one and phase two trials of all the vaccine candidates, we do know that antibodies in the participants in those trials last for at least 9 months. So it's unlikely, I think, that you would need to get a booster shot within a year, apart from the initial two injections that you need, of course, to get the vaccine in full. But that's something we need to consider. We need to continue looking at. We need to make sure that the virus isn't developing variants that would allow it to get around a vaccine and might mean that we have to actually change the vaccine.
Well, you snuck in a little good news with that one. 206 wants to know, I'm a wedding planner, and while it looks like I am at this point going to save the majority of my 2021 season, couples are still inquiring about moving into 2022. If they do this, I will have lost 3 years worth of income due to not being able to book future dates. Do you foresee weddings being able to reopen at larger capacities, no less than 100, and have the ability to dance? Those are the biggest questions my couples have right now, and they're asking us to look into a crystal ball to try to figure out if those can happen. Any insight would be much appreciated.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and I think a lot of different small businesses, especially those that are involved in event planning, such as wedding planning, are probably asking right now. And my answer to that is it really depends on how fast we can get vaccine out to as many people as possible, and it also will depend on how many people are actually willing to take the vaccine. So what I would encourage anybody who wants to try to have large gathering style events in 2021 is to encourage their customers and themselves to get a vaccine as soon as it is available to them. The more people are vaccinated, the quicker we will reach the herd immunity threshold and the quicker that community transmission will go down. One of my biggest concerns is that not enough people will take the vaccine to actually reach that threshold, in which case we're going to be stuck like this for quite some time. So I just really, really emphasize the importance of getting one of those vaccines as soon as it's available to you.
Dr. Rasmussen, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We can't stress enough how grateful we are to have you come on our show every single week for the last 10 months as we are going through this pandemic. Thank you.
My pleasure, G. And, you know, it's one of the bright spots of my week every week. I always look forward to talking with you and Ursula.
Thank you.
All right. Tell Tass hello.
Will do.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Just want to remind you, with everything else that's going on, I don't want this to go overlooked. And today is Giving Tuesday. And as you know, G, we have been working with Treehouse for years. This is our 32nd year of holiday magic that's benefiting youth and foster care statewide. And here's something super cool. Thanks to children's author Marissa Meyer, the first $20,000 donated to this year's Holiday Magic fundraiser will be matched. So if you have been waiting for this opportunity to help out foster kids statewide and you have been doing Holiday Magic with us and partnering with us, right now, your gift will be doubled. So donate right now. All you need to do is text the word MAGIC to 98973, 98973 for a quick link to donate right now. And again, these are kids who oftentimes don't have much to look forward to, and you can have a chance to make their holidays brighter by donating, and your money right now will be matched. Again, just text the word MAGIC to 98973. Still ahead.
You know it. Stacy Joe, our Seahawks insider, on to talk about that exciting win that happened. But I have one question about one particular player on this Seahawks team. We do that next. It's the Gene Ursula Show.
Welcome back to the Gene Ursula Show. This hour of our show is brought to you by Economy Fence Center, and I am so happy that we have fun stuff to talk about today with Stacy Joe Ross, who joins us from 710 ESPN. I was a little bit worried after the first few minutes of the game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was texting G, and I said, do you think Russell's been spending too much time talking about that fragrance? But he got settled down, and they looked pretty good.
Well, the offense wasn't its best version of itself.
No.
But some of that was decision-making. In fact, I'd say a lot of that was decision-making. Those two fourth down calls were weird. They didn't need to use a timeout there. I didn't mind going for it. I actually liked it on both occasions, and I was encouraged that they went for it back-to-back, essentially. But it's I'm not worried about any of it.
No,
like, I'm really not.
And why is that? Is it
because everyone's going to have an off day, and for the most part, this offense has been the better half of the football for this team. Just frankly, right? That's not slighting the defense. It's just saying, for the most part, the offense has been the better side of the ball.
DK Metcalf had an amazing game.
Play fake. Here comes the rush, and Russell's going to throw deep over the top. Got a man out there reaching up, making the catch. Guess who? DK Metcalf. Over the top of Darius Slay. I might be a little bit sore, but who cares? Because I'm a Megatron. I'm going to reach up and catch this perfectly thrown ball with one arm over Darius Slay for a big first down. Are you kidding me?
So I didn't realize that he has a chip on his shoulder when it comes to this team in particular.
Well, he claimed to not have that. He claimed to not have that. But if I'm DK Metcalf, I am aware of every single team passing on me in the first round, early part of the second round. And that means the Eagles were part of that. They also took a receiver before you. So they could have taken you. They needed a receiver. They went with someone else. So, yeah, I mean, it's great for him to have that chip, because I know that there are some people that get annoyed when great players have a chip on their shoulder that they feel like they're inventing, but DK isn't really inventing that. I mean, there were like 7 or 8 receivers taken before him, and he is the most successful receiver from his class, and it's not that close. So I get it.
I'm texting Doug Baldwin right now and saying that you're talking about him for making chips on his shoulder.
No, dear Doug. Because Stacey, listen to me. When players do it when they have a reason to have a chip, I completely understand. In fact, I don't mind it when anyone makes it up, but like when Doug Baldwin has a chip, even after being a 1,000-yard receiver, even after having a successful stretch of games, like when was he included in a top 10 list in the NFL, even when he was a top receiver in the NFL? Never. What I mean? Like, he was constantly overlooked.
Okay, so he
was undrafted. Mm-hmm. So I don't, it's like Richard Sherman. I don't care if Richard Sherman is going to be a Hall of Famer. He can still have that chip on his shoulder because it was there.
Mm.
Like, I get it. It's when guys are like a second round. If Nick Bosa was like, I have a chip on my shoulder, I'd be like, you were the second overall pick. What are you talking about? Everyone thought you would be good. You don't get to just invent one.
Stacey Joe, yeah. I told our listeners that I had a question for you about a particular player. And considering that you guys are talking about DK Metcalf, he's the question that I have. I'm looking at the list right now, and DK Metcalf with 1,039 yards. He is the leading pass catcher in the National Football League right now. So it's got me thinking, like, you know how when you have a good thing and you want to keep a good thing? Well, what are the Seahawks going to do when it's time to pay this man? Because he is going to command top dollars.
Absolutely.
Help us understand.
Yeah, this is going to be 20 plus million we're talking about, a top tier contract. I mean, that's contracts now. He'll become a free agent after the 2022 season. But normally when you want to lock a player down, you'll do it prior to that final season, which would mean after next year, they're going to be looking at an extension for this guy potentially that summer. At least that's what I would do. I think you need him. I think that he makes your offense explosive. In his second year, he's already one of the best players on your team, like a top five, possibly higher than that, player on your team right now. And that is insane. That is insane production from a second year player. Became the quickest Seahawk ever to get to 1,000 yards in a season through just 11 games. They haven't had a receiver quite like this before. You better not still be texting Doug Baldwin. I've always stood in Doug Baldwin's corner, constantly. I have constantly defended him against Mike Salk.
I have a... Oh, really?
I have
a crush on Doug Baldwin, by the way.
Wait, I'm
He's great.
Text, yeah. I'm going to text him that right now.
You know
now,
what? Okay. Wow, I'm real salty right now.
Ursula
okay.
has
I want to ask you something else, though, just because I find their personal lives so interesting. And you see DK... I mean, he just, Megatron, that's a great description for him because he just looks like kind of out of this
world. Not for DK Metcalf. He did not like that comparison. Oh. Did you hear that? So Jim Schwartz, who's the defensive coach for Philadelphia, he apparently, according to DK Metcalf, went up to DK Metcalf and was like, hey, I coached with Megatron and you remind me of him. You're just not there yet. And DK Metcalf retweeted.
That's a backhanded compliment.
It's right? Right?
Yeah.
It's like someone telling you, like, if you just did this with your hair, your face, you would look like a model. And you're like,
exactly.
What?
Thanks.
I don't. So anyways, so DK retweeted, did you guys watch The Last Dance with Michael Jordan? And there's a moment that went viral where Michael Jordan says, and I took that personally. DK Metcalf retweeted that.
Speaking of personal.
Yeah.
Ursula,
mm-hmm.
just so you know, people are texting in. People I saw on social media, all I'm hearing about it. But Stacey Joe, all of a sudden, she used to just come on our show.
Uh-huh.
She's famous now.
Incredibly.
She's been on TV now. People are like, oh my goodness, that's Stacey Joe. Don't be changing on us, Stacey.
It's already happening, G. The moment I get verified on Twitter, I'm going to be next level egotistical. You won't recognize me anymore.
You talk about big bucks for DK Metcalf. Stacey's going to be commanding
easily.
Some.
At least $20 million per year.
I know. We are lucky to have Stacey.
I like that question,
I want to ask this, though, just on a personal level about DK.
I thought
is
it was going to be about me. See, I'm
married?
Already changing.
I mean, what is the deal? What's the deal? I mean, he had purple hair yesterday. Didn't he have a gold?
So I actually want to ask him about
that.
I love DK's style. He's very Gen Z with it. I'm behind it. The only concern I have is, as someone who colors my hair often, you've got to be careful. You've got to be careful.
Yeah, because you can like lose chunks of it,
okay.
right? I mean, break off.
Stacey, well, yeah. I tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a I dare you.
Okay. I'm already nervous.
I dare you.
I know what you're going
to
say.
Ask DK when you guys talk to him next.
Okay.
Ask him, say, hey, DK, did you ever put peroxide in your head as a kid?
I'm going to ask him that.
I mean, you see the different colors of hair.
Yeah.
I know when I was younger, I put the peroxide in my hair.
How'd that work out for you?
It changed colors.
Do you have pictures?
No.
Gee.
I don't have pictures.
Make you feel better. I used lemon, and I think I've used other products too.
Oh,
I did get the orange face.
I did the awful mistake of the day of my prom. I went to get my hair highlighted, and it messed up really. It looked like orange stripes. And the little brother of my date sees me and immediately goes, "You look like you have lightning head." And I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means, but it cut me to my core.
No, it's still painful.
Lightning head.
Yeah, we need to find out more details about these guys, though.
Wait, did you just ask me if DK is single?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. I know he's not married. You know, he seems like someone that's pretty intensely focused on his job. He does. He really does. I'm not kidding. But I would have to imagine a young eligible bachelor is dabbling.
Yeah.
Dabbling.
All right. Last thing before you go. Our listeners want to know if you're going to continue to go by Stacey Joe.
Yeah.
Because they said they saw you on TV and it said Stacey Ross and they were confused.
Yeah. Well, Stacey Joe is my government name. So you're right. I need to make sure that that's consistent. I feel it feels so much more friendly to be Stacey Joe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Yeah. I feel like I'm talking to people I know when I hear that.
And I'm going to say this. And I've said this to Stacey before, but not only is she brilliant and so knowledgeable about sports, but she is absolutely drop dead gorgeous.
You guys, let's keep this segment
FYI.
Going. Let's keep it up. Oh, and humble.
Not that has anything
so
to
humble.
I'm telling you, the moment that Stacey Joe doesn't answer a text, a call, or anything,
no, it's going to be because you ratted me out to Doug Baldwin. That's why it's going to be.
Thank you, Stacey Joe.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you. Coming up next, it's time for Scenarios. You guys are listening to Gee and Ursula Show. It is the Gee and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Coming up in about 15 minutes, it is time for Ursula and I to agree to disagree. And it's also a chance for you to text in and say, finally, I agree with G. Right now, it is time for Scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
G, Ursula, and Chef, here's the deal. And make sure you understand, I am happy. I am so happy. But yet, I'm also sad. It's hard right now to pretend to be excited. My boyfriend thinks we're engaged. He is even calling me his fiance, and I guess we probably are, but I'm also having second thoughts. Last week, he proposed. It wasn't much of a surprise because we've been planning it, and it is a dream come true. But I always dreamed of a fairy tale proposal and an awesome ring. So he popped the question and presented his great-grandmother's ring. It's small, it's old, and basically, it's horrible. I know it's sentimental and probably something that he thought would be meaningful. But frankly, it's embarrassing. It isn't at all how I imagine it, and I'm having a really hard time being excited about it. Does that make me selfish? What should I do? Do I talk to him about it? I'm afraid to break his heart. 989-73 State Roofing text line. Ursula, you're up to bat first.
Oy, oy, oy. There's so much I don't know about this couple. So I don't know financial status. I don't know anything like that. Which, why should it matter? Maybe that's all he could afford. Maybe that was something, you know, if it's going to sound really superficial and all about materialistic if you say, hey, I'm not happy with this ring. But the reality is, I mean, you will have to wear it. And if you think it's embarrassing, maybe he can call that, you know, a promise ring or something else, or you can get something else. But it sounds like this relationship has way more problems than great grandma's ring. They're not communicating. he should have known all of this. This is stuff that they should have discussed before this happened. She can't even tell if she's engaged or not. I don't get it. I think there's way more problems with this relationship than what we're hearing.
All right. Chef?
Does this make me selfish? Yes, it does. It makes you very selfish. That being said, who are these people that get engaged or get kind of engaged without knowing what kind of ring their partner would want?
Thank you.
Or if the person will even say yes in the first place?
Uh-huh.
I don't understand that. Like, an engagement is not a surprise. It should not be a surprise. Like, no one should be shocked in this situation. This is not like 1910 where you talk with the father first and, well, may I have your daughter's hand and I will surprise her next fortnight. No, this is 2020, man. Talk about things that are important to you. And if you can't do that before you're married, it's not going to get better when you get married.
Thank you.
And plus, has anyone ever really had a great marriage after being completely ambivalent about being engaged in the first place? Call it off, dude.
G?
Call it off.
Hey, okay, or how about just talk?
I'm with her. Before, I'm with her. Yeah. Wait, I'm with her. Huh? I get it. Look, it wasn't what she imagined. That's it. I mean, on social media, we see people getting engaged. It's been Thanksgiving and the holidays, and people are showing the ring. And you know how people show it, or they show something in the car, and they try to pretend like they're not showing the ring, but they want to show off the ring. Mm-hmm. And bam, she gets engaged. She loves this man, and she got that ring, and it was underwhelming. And it is bothering her. And what she did was, she says, you know what? I'm going to write the G and Ursula Show and see what they have to say about it. And so if you're listening right now, here's the deal. I understand, and talk to him about it. Don't hold it in, because if you hold, no, it doesn't make you selfish. It's just the truth. You got a small ring. You got a ring that you don't feel good about. You got a ring that your friends in a group chat are going to make a separate group chat, and they're going to talk about your ring. So this is your chance to tell him right now. So then that way, because trust me, people, they do. They make the separate group chats to talk about you. It happens.
They're judging the size of your ring. Okay, can I share one little truthful story? So this is my own scenario. Okay, uh-huh. And so all is not lost if you're disappointed with the first ring. Because when my husband, dear long live Mark, first, it wasn't our engagement, but he wanted to show. It was kind of like a promise ring. Mm-hmm. I mean, bless his heart, but this promise ring had a gem on it that was not a real gem.
And well, Ursula can tell.
And then when you got...
It was a true trinket. But you know what? I made the right decision and saying yes.
Long live Mark. Coming up next, it is time to agree to disagree. It's G and Ursula.